for my name, and see what I did to it because of the wickedness of my people Israel. While you were doing all these things, declares the Lord, I spoke to you again and again, but you did not listen. I called you, but you did not answer. Therefore, what I did in Shiloh, I will now do to the house that hears my name, that bears my name. The temple you trust in, the place I give to you and your fathers, I will thrust you from my presence, just as I did all your brothers, the people of Ephraim. What is he talking about? What you guys studied previous to that versus what's going on? Do you remember what's happening? He kind of phrases it there. What are the people doing?
Sinning.
They're doing whatever they kind of want to do. Does that sound familiar? People kind of do whatever they want to do. And when problems come up, what's the first thing we do?
Run to God.
But when he's talking to them, speaking to them, and calling them, they're what? Not hearing, not listening. You know, gosh, that could be today. You know, anybody here ever guilty of not listening? I mean, I am. I mean, I have opportunities every day where I could tell someone about Christ, but I have my own agenda. You know, I've got my own schedule, and if I do that, it throws me off. I was joking with some of them back in the back corner. What's your name?
Norm
said, hey, you started handing those out 20 minutes ago. And I said, I ran into Joe. You know? But we're that way. God has us on a task and we're heading. And all of a sudden, something comes along that diverts us. You know, to get you off track, get you... And here's Israel. Who's their God? The God, right? And what are they doing?
Idol worshiping.
They're doing whatever. I mean, they're in this place, and so he says, go and look what I did in Shiloh. What did he do in Shiloh? What did he do to the place that his people would come? Someone knows. Joe, what do you do in Shiloh?
A place.
He built it. Who built it? I mean, and what happened to the place at Shiloh because of the people not listening, not obeying, not... What happens to your heart when you don't spend time with God? Okay, so pretty much we're talking about there's a change in relationship. There's something going on here because not of God. Does God ever change? But because of the people. The people are now changing and they're going. I mean, you got to love God and his patience. Because you all have been studying through the Old Testament, and you see how many times has God said to his people, I'm your God. How many times has he reminded them and called them back to him? You know, and here we are in Jeremiah, again, God saying, while you were doing all these things, declares the Lord, I spoke to you again and again, but you did not listen. Okay? Man, we only read, five verses, four verses? And there's a whole story in those four verses that so pertained to Israel then, but so pertained to us today. I mean, what are we doing as his church. I mean, do we hear him? Do we, if we do hear, do we listen? Do we do those things he tells us to do? I mean, I just did a thing with my people on go ye therefore into all the world. Now, surely he was speaking to them back then. He wasn't speaking to us, right? What does it mean? Yes, ma'am.
History has a way of repeating itself.
Over and over. And the old saying is, if you don't study history and know it, you're condemned to what?
Repeat it.
I mean, if we don't know it, we're condemned to repeat it. It's interesting that you're studying the Old Testament. We have to know this because we're seeing it. And today we're repeating it, aren't we? Because maybe we don't know this. Well, we know it. We read it. We went over it. I have a lady in my church that every year she has that 365 Bible. And every year she reads all the way through it. And we get to places like this, and I say, well, now, Judy, you know this, because you've read it through how many times? She's on her 47th time through the Bible. I said, so you know this. She says, I don't know that I've ever seen that. Okay, so you read the Bible through 47 times, but you never saw these verses. Because we're so intent on reading through the Bible that we're not comprehending what we're reading. And I said to her, nothing against it, Judy, but what good has that done you? If you're not comprehending, if you're not able to live. And here we are, as a group, studying the Word, reading this, and saying, oh gosh, my mind goes to, stupid Israel. Why don't they get it? But then I have to go, oh gosh, stupid Tracy. Why haven't you got it? What are we missing? What's not getting through to us? Who's talking to them? God. Who is God? The Almighty. The creator of all things. So if he's the creator of all things, then I have to assume that he created me. And my dad used to say this to us sometimes in a joking matter, but he'd say, you know, I brought you in this life, I could take you out. I mean, when we did something wrong, he's just like, oh, exasperated, and I brought you in. Boy, no, he never would. Why? Love. We have this God that we're talking about who's talking to his people here in this time and here today, and I think sometimes he might say, I brought you in this world, I could take you out. But he literally could. But he loves us.
Did he actually do that?
Yeah. When he got to that point, I mean, that's the whole story of the Ark Encounter, right? I mean, why was there the Ark Encounter? He got to a point where he was done. Let's try again. Now, some people say that's where God made a mistake. I don't think my God ever makes a mistake. He didn't make a mistake. He made humans. He made man the way he wanted to make man. And man made the mistake. And so God went, shh, not going to happen. Not going to be there. You know, and when we tried again. What is it that keeps messing up God's plan? Us. You know, every time I'm here, I say these words, choice. You know, we have to understand, we have a choice in this. The Israelites here had a choice to do what's right, and to listen to God, to hear him, to obey him, to do those things. You know, so when I told my people, go ye therefore, what does the word go mean? Go. Okay? And it doesn't mean, this is going to sound really bad, it doesn't mean go to church. It doesn't mean go to Bible study. It doesn't mean go to worship practice if you're part of the choir or group, instrumental group or something. It doesn't mean go to Lady Sewing Circle. It doesn't mean, when it says go, it means go to the people. Go to the people. You know, we come in here to get our armor shined up, to get repowered, re-energized, and stuff like that. And we're supposed to go out that door. Go, therefore, to all the world, to all the people. Who is that? Who's to go? We are. We who bear the name Christian, right? Those who call Christ their Lord and Savior. Okay? To whom? We're it. We're it. When's the last time you cast your net? You know, when's the last time you threw out Christ to somebody? That was throwing your net, right? And did you bring in the harvest?
I don't know yet. They haven't
shown up. He sowed the seed. Who brings in the harvest? God. He planted a seed. Now God will work with that seed in those people to do those things. And it's just as simple as that. When we say cast the net, it's just as simple as that. The Israelites were so busy doing what? Me, 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 me. When we get into the me-ism, there's no room for God or Christ. You know, and the me-ism could be me doing whatever I want to do, or poor me, you know, I didn't get to do what I wanted to do. You know, just different things. So he is, in these verses, saying, I called to you, you didn't listen, you didn't come, you didn't answer. Therefore, what I did to Shiloh, I will now do to the house that bears my name. The temple you trust in, the place I gave you and your fathers, I will thrust you from my presence. And that's a harsh statement. Okay? It's not just I'm going to set you aside. I'm going to thrust you. I'm going to shove you. I'm going to push you out of my presence. You think it's so great out there? Fine. Have it. How many of you want it? We act like we do sometimes, don't we? And sometimes we'll diddle in it. We'll go out and say, well, you know. And it never is. It is never cracked up to what it's supposed to be. You know that old saying, grass looks greener on the other side of the fence? Until you get there. You know, then they have weeds too. You know, and so God's getting ready to teach a hard lesson. Anybody here ever have a hard lesson in life? Was it your parents that taught you the hard lesson? Or has God taught you a hard lesson? Maybe it was God through your parents. True. You know, but how many of you like hard lessons? We make it that way, don't we? I mean, by our own, again, choices, you know, and because of choices, sometimes there's a discipline that comes along with it. It was fun while it lasted, but now we pay the cost of, you know. Anyone here ever go to the Charlotte County Prison? Joe, you been there? How long? No. No. Did you see the plaque that's over the door? The warden previous to the one that's there now had it put up, and it said, "You did the crime. Now you'll do the time." Now, I always heard it, if you do the crime, you'll do the time, but he's got it, you did it. You know, when they walk in, that's what they see. You know, and he's good at, he was very good at teaching them, listen, you're doing a time, do the time. While you do the time, learn from what you did to get you here. Learn through this time so that when you depart from here, you don't have to come back. Now, a lot of them are there for a lot of time. You know, it's not your normal everyday prison. But when you go in, and when we went in and did some Bible studies with them, you know, I saw that sign and I got to asking, and the guard had to search it. Okay, I don't remember who put that there. Well, it was this warden who did this because he was a Christian. And when he told the people to learn from the crime they did in the time they have there, he was trying to show them a new direction, a new light. You know, throwing out his net. Okay? That's a broad net. There's a lot of people in that prison. How do you know if you made a difference? You may never know. Does that keep you from casting your net? Yes. Yes. It's the same and it's all part of the same. I mean, how many of you are one way at church and another way out at a restaurant or society? Or how many of you are one way at church and the same way at the restaurant society? And I'm asking that because I being a minister, I've seen people who sit here and act all... I'm afraid what word I might use. He might throw something up on that screen. I'm thinking the word pious, but you know, I had a guy who every Sunday it was like, "Brother, how are you?" "Oh, sister," and hug and says, but when you saw him out in public in his dealings, he was a contractor, and in his dealings, I mean, cutting corners to do this and just, you know, I almost want to tell him, stop claiming Christ. Because Sunday morning you're acting this way, and out in the world you are a totally different person. You know, and you should be the same in church as you are out of church. Okay? And your net should cast the same. So when we're talking casting a net, I mean, we can throw a net out for Christ, or we can just throw a net out. It comes down to who you are, whose you are, what you are, like you were saying. I mean, it comes down to that because it all plays part. You know, I can be Tracy, Christian, who gave his life to Christ, who's living the best, or I can be Tracy, what's in it for me? I think you all understand that. You know, we sometimes want, and so you have to be careful, because if I'm going to cast a net, and I'm assuming, when I said that earlier, we're casting for Christ, we're casting for fish, men, women, to come into the kingdom, it's that way, but you're absolutely correct. We have to know who we are, whose we are, what we are, how we are when we're doing it. Go ahead.
When you're Christian, people look at you differently in the world. You have to act part of a Christian and be a Christian no matter where you are. Because if they can chip away at you or whatever, or find out one little flaw in you or whatever, they'll magnify it because they don't agree with what you agree with.
Right. Is that society? Society is just looking for you to step left when you should have gone right. They're poised and waiting. You know, if you've ever been part of a ministry, in a ministry, something like that, you know that when you do something out of the norm of ministry, people pounce.
They don't forget it.
Right. As soon as you pick up the cause of Christ, you are in a glass house. Joe.
You're that way, Tracy, because you're being paid by the church. Haven't you heard that? I heard that so many times.
I just now heard it. I'm stumped on the part that they're paying me. No. Right.
I use this example. When I went to work as a structural iron worker, 90% of the time, at the time that I did, I had a smile on my face, I was there before work, and I was ready to go. And the minute work was, man, it's Monday, and you got a smile on your face, and you're here early drinking coffee. I said, let's go to work, fellas. I said, the man's paying me. Because he expects me to take care of his stuff. And as a Christian, I expect this of my church members. And, oh, there he goes, preaching to us.
No, but that's true because I've always worked every job I've ever worked under the pretense it's God's. I might work for Norm here in a business that he has, but who gave him the business? I mean, and so you do your best for the master kind of thing. I fight off some of their things and say you're getting paid for it because I take a very small amount of money from church and I work a job outside. Kind of solely for that purpose, and I know Joe did that, I know Dwight does. I mean, it's solely for that purpose that I find it hard to be a minister who makes more than my people. Okay? And there's some around town here that, you know, the average income in their church is like $40,000 a year or $35,000 if you're on retirement, it's probably less than that. About that, and the minister's making $100,000 a year. You know, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I'm with the people. I'm one of you. Why should it be that way? So I've always kind of guarded myself that way to do that. That way when people say, well, you get paid to do this. Not really. I mean, they're paying me, but, you know, I'm going to do this whether they paid me or not. I did it when I was an electrician for Dwight. I did it when I was working in a steel mill in Chicago. I mean, what you see should be what you get. You know, whether it's working steel like you did. I mean, I worked at USCO. It was a U.S. refinery that did aluminum refinery and aluminum stuff. And I was the same way. I showed up early. We couldn't wear our clothes to work. They supplied them. You went to your locker. You got your clean uniform out. You put it on at the end of the shift. You took it off, put it back. They cleaned it. Because it was so sooty, you would just ruin all your stuff. So we go there and do that. You know. And the guy said, you're probably the only person that hangs your pants and shirt and coat back on the hanger. The rest of the guys just throw it in the bottom of their locker and go. And I said, well, I'm trying to take care of it. you know, I'm going to have to wear that again tomorrow once you clean it and stuff. He's like, you don't always get the same outfit. They're all just by size. You might get that guy's coat tomorrow. I said, well, that'd be a shame. I've seen his coat. You know, but it's that way. I mean, because of whose I am, I live different. Because of whose they are here that we're reading about, they should have been different. But the world got to them. Because the world got to them, God did Shiloh. Because the world got to them, he pointed out to them, you're not hearing, you're not listening, you're not following, so I am now going to thrust you from my presence. I'm now going to be done with you. Now, I don't know how many of you would like to hear those words from God. I'm done with you. Now, we know history. We've got the Bible in front of us. We know that he wasn't totally done. He's done with them at this period, and he's going to teach them a lesson. And through that lesson, he's going to draw them back to him. But if we could read this and understand the lesson, and we could get through it, then we know, okay, if I act this way, I'm his. And because I'm his, he's going to take care of me, and he's going to watch over me, and he's going to bless me. But if I go this way and step outside of him, just for whatever reason, whatever I chose to do, punishment. Their punishment was, okay, we're going to thrust you out there and leave you for a bit. I mean, we already saw them wander in the wilderness, right? We already saw Moses them not being allowed into the promised land, punishment. We see God constantly, and he's consistent. He's constant and consistent with it. If you do this, I do this. If you do this, I do this. It's what I said there. Yeah, it's what I said there. He's thrusting them away, but it's not permanent. We could read the history. We know he's going to bring them back. It's exactly what you said. He might let you, because of your choice, go out there and do that. Where's he at? Where's God always? At your side. How's his arms? I mean, we read the story of the prodigal son because he was out there, but the father is just waiting. Okay? He's waiting. He's going to thrust them out here. And understand this, as a parent, you understand this. When you let your kids go through something, have you ever let your kids go through something for a lesson to learn or something? It eats you up, doesn't it? You're just like, oh, because you want to go and save them from that, but just like, okay, let them make their choices and we'll see how it goes. But I'm right here. Now, when God said, I am going to thrust you from my presence, those words probably did not come easy from him. And you said earlier, why? Because he loves us. Just like we love our kids I love my church, and sometimes they have to go through. Hey, we think we want to do this. Okay. I don't think it's a good idea. Well, how many of you think it's a good idea? They all raise their hand. All right, let's try it. And when it doesn't go, they all look at me and they said, how did you know? Just knew it's not a good idea. Because sometimes we could choose things that look like God, but it's not God. Ever do that? Ever pray to God about a decision And before you're done praying, you're already heading a direction? So you've already made up your mind. You're just wanting God to bless where you're heading, when sometimes God can't bless where we're heading. Not when we made the choice we made. And here they made a choice. And God's not going to bless their choice. He's going to discipline them. He's going to thrust them out. But as you said, He's there. God's going to be there to welcome you back if you turn around. Yeah. And God's ready to grab you if you come His direction. But sometimes God might not pull you out of what you're going into until you're ready to turn around. See, I do a drawing with my people when they say they want to become a Christian, they want to do this. I do a drawing and I show them Matthew 7, 13, and 14. Wide is the gate and broad is the path. And I draw this big slide. It's a slide. And down here at the bottom is this little circle that says hell. And when we're born into this life, we're doing this, all of a sudden we find out sin and we do go into sin and our life is filled with sin. And if we don't come to a point where we say, hey, so I got to do something different. This isn't working. If we don't come to a point that we want to repent of what we've been doing and turn our lives around, we're going to slide right down that slide. And in the end of life, we're going to be in hell. But we can turn that around. The entire time we're on that slide, where's God? Right. And God is constantly throwing people in your path to straighten your walk, to remind you where you're at. Satan's constantly throwing people in your walk to divert you. And you've got to know the difference. I mean, there's some things that, look, we're talking about Franklin Graham Crusade coming to town. That's what Wade laid me in that corner over there. You know, and Joe's like, yo, it's coming. What do you do with it? I went to a crusade once. And Joe said he went once. And we went for the same reason. I want to see what they're doing and what they're saying, so that if some of my people go and they come back and ask me, I can answer them. I can say, here's what you're doing. But it's tough going into that arena. Now, Franklin Graham does a lot of good with a lot of different things, but it's tough going into that arena when they are faith only. When they're not baptism. When they're not, you know, and your people hear that and see that and learn that, they're going to come back to you saying, hey, why do we, and boy, you better have the answers. Because they make it look biblical. But if you know your Bible and you read it, I mean, what does the Bible talk? Baptism. Baptism by what? Not sprinkle, not pour, not dip, not dunk, not, but immersion. You know, why was Jesus immersed? Cleansed from what? Jesus? Jesus did it as the example for us. I mean, to show us, here's how it's done. Here's what I expect. Here's what the Father expects, and so that's what we do. I mean, it's very symbolic. After Jesus done it, after his whole life, we now get it because it was the death. You know, at one point, the death of Tracy, the burial with Christ to raise to live a new life. It's so symbolic of what Christ did when he was died, buried, rose again to go right to the right hand of the Father and be there pleading our case. You know? And here the people don't get it, so God's going to teach them again. And I would love it if somebody would study through the Bible and find out, okay, so this is the 19th time that the Israelites blew it. But it's not important how many times we blow it. What's important? How many times did you come back? How many times did you get back to Him and what He's doing? I think America is at that threshold.
We've thought about that for several years.
Yep. Well, Jesus is coming back. We thought about that. We just don't understand God's timing. 1,000 years. You know.
We don't listen. Friend, here's a good example. Look at this building. We have a safe, comfortable place to come and learn. And take what we have learned out into the world. And how many are here?
Did you see the temperature outside? I'm not saying cold. That's beautiful.
Well, it's Sunday too.
Yeah. And when it's beautiful, we gotta take advantage of it. That's just the mind frame of some people. We gotta take advantage of it. I mean, I wasn't in church Sunday. I was at a convention. I was in church Sunday, but I wasn't in my church. And it's interesting because the Sunday before we had 97. This past Sunday we had 53. What was the difference? When the cat's away, the mice will play.
There you go.
You know, the weather was beautiful. It was cool and finally could get out. I mean, my wife said the statement, "Oh gosh, if we are home, just think how much yard work we could get done." Well, I'm glad we weren't home, you know. But it's those things, and nothing against that. But what's your commitment?
You know, and I think of when I hear about the churches being formed in Africa and those places that they're, you know, they're not comfortable.
No,
and they do it.
And if you read, our New Year's was the mark that China started their new discipline regime for Christians. So China, since our New Year, we're 8 days into it, since our New Year, they have decided to crack down on these church things. Because it's making too big a difference in our country. And if we're going to keep control, these Christians are getting out of control.
Yeah, no. Heard that,
well, you see it in our country.
We've seen it.
We Christians, you've seen it through the Bible, you've seen it through, I mean, it's going to happen. And so what do? You come to Bible study. Commend you for being here today. It's beautiful outside. But what does this do for you when you walk out that door?
Armor. Put a little armor on. If we do it enough, maybe we can bring somebody in.
Yep. Maybe you can talk to someone looking at the Eagles. Maybe you can see someone out at a restaurant. Maybe it's, you know, it's something. We did our normal kids Christmas, we call it, at our church. We had 173 kids that we bought Christmas for. We have the Civic Center that we go to, and we do a huge catered meal for the kids and their parents and their grandparents, and we put on a big concert for them and all the stuff, so they have this Christmas that's beyond. The fire trucks all come screaming in the parking lot. Santa gets off. We do the little Santa thing with them. But through the whole thing, they read the Christmas story. They see a video of the Christmas story. They get little manger scenes in their baskets. They get Christmas cards from the church, inviting them to church and different stuff like that, showing them it's church. Yeah, there's that Santa thing out there, but even Santa's going to kneel at the throne, right? We tell them that and give them their Christmas. We do that every year. How many people do we get to come to church from that? In the 23 years we've done it, we've got three people. Now, this year, out of nowhere, I had a semi pull in our parking lot, and it was full of food boxes. And it was from a community who said, we wanted to gather in 20 food boxes to help some of the needy in our own park. They gathered in almost 300 boxes. They said, because the economy, everything's good, everybody gave. And they said, we don't know what to do with it, and we heard that you took care of some people, so here, get this out to people. Toys for Tots, the Marines came in. Said, hey, we've had a upload of just toys galore. We hear you do this kind of stuff. Now they're coming to our little church. We're like you, just a little church sitting here. And they brought us 4,000 toys. This is after we already gave Christmas to 170 some kids. And they said, see what you can do with it. Regions Bank came in and gave us 80 bicycles. And I mean, our people were just overwhelmed, kind of like, they said, what do we do? And I said, take care of the people. That's what they're asking us to do. Take care of the people. You know, we went into one neighborhood that was 17 trailers on the street. It's Palm Avenue there in Fort Myers. It's a, I want to say it's migrant, but it's not migrant. They live here. They are American citizens. They do peace work, stuff like that. They try to do what they can do and try to, you know, they're not real educated, stuff like that. So we went in there, and from the lady on the corner who was 93 years old, living on her own, to the people at the end of the street, the Hernandez family that had 9 kids, everybody got taken care of. And we went in on Friday to find out what the need was for these people and hear their stories. And we went into homes and different things. And the Hernandez family, 2 weeks before we got there, sold all their kids' bicycles in order to put food on the table. They held a yard sale at their house and sold things that they needed just so they can get food. And we're thinking, well, we can take care of that because somebody gave us bicycles, you know. So on this street of 17 homes, there was 26 kids. Every kid got a new bike. They got bags of toys. Every house got more food than they can do in a month, probably. You know, the Hernandez family got their extra dose because they had extra people, you know. And it's not the feeling they got. It's the feeling our people got. I mean, we have people coming back to church just bawling because, look, I mean, we call it Scooby-Dooing. I don't know if you know what Scooby-Doo does. You ever see Scooby-Doo cartoon? When he gets ready to take off, what does he do? Runs in place, and all of a sudden he goes, right? And these little kids Scooby-Dooed. I mean, they're just standing there like, and they wouldn't do anything until finally we said, hey, these are yours. Come get them. You know, and here they came. It's that feeling. And I'm telling you this because they weren't doing it. We don't always do it. But what we're learning here is if we're not doing it, we're going to get punished for it. Because we have to understand that we are, what did you say?
Modern day apostles.
Modern day apostles. We are his hands and feet. We are his people, and if all we ever do is come here and learn and not go out those doors, we're not any much better than these people here because it's all about us. And what we try to teach our people is it's not about us, it's about him, and he's out there. He's standing with his arms open waiting for that person to come home. He's looking for us to give that word to the people with the eagles so that they might get that seed and that seed might come to fruition and you might see them Sunday morning. And if you don't, you might be able to go back out here and see them again and say, hey, you know, missed you Sunday. We got another Sunday coming. Hope to see you there. You know, and just kind of do those things. Because that's what this is all about. They were not coming to God. They were not hearing God. They were not doing God. And because they weren't doing God, I don't know about you, I don't want to be thrust from his presence. I don't want to be thrown out on my own to do my own thing because I did that once in my life and it didn't go so well. Yeah. So we have to look at it and see what are we going to do and how are we going to do it as a church, as individuals. You know, Joe said, when you go out, I mean, everything we do, we represent Christ. From the biggest thing to the smallest thing. And there's no difference to God. Big things, small things are just all important things that He needs done. Yes.
Day 11's to quote her, she said, my life may be the only Bible someone reads.
Right. And I've said that to people, and then I ask you, okay, so if that's true, what are people reading? If you are the only Bible people read, what are they reading from you? Or maybe we need to rewrite parts of our life so that they're reading what's, you know, hopefully what they read through me is Christ and God, not Tracy. You wouldn't like Tracy, the book of Tracy. You might like the book of Christ living through Tracy a whole lot better. So, all right, I took all your time. Big whopping 5 verses. I just want to make Dwight proud and let him know that we can do that. Sir. Uh-huh.
You know, it's good, it's Christian to be helping these people out. But is this a group that you help every year?
No.
What is the problem?
No, we don't let them. Kids Christmas, they're allowed to come 2 years in a row. So we're constantly rotating new people in it and stuff like that. These neighborhood things, that was the first time we ever did that. Out of the neighborhood things, this is what I've left out of that. Out of the neighborhood things, we had 17 people come to church. We had much more because it wasn't just here in the Civic Center, a big party. It was us going to them. It was us meeting them at their house and seeing their lifestyle and invite, personal invite, you know. So, right. Yeah, we lock a lot of them into our Clean Start ministry. Our Clean Start ministry is all about, at our church, getting people from point A to B. And we've taken people from, we've gotten people from being on the streets, homeless, to good jobs and an apartment and different stuff like that. I mean, we're about giving them, we're about the leg up, not the handout. Okay, that's our philosophy. We try to give them a leg up. So these people that we helped in that one trailer section, I mean, it's an ongoing now ministry to help them help themselves. And I know enough people that are looking for employees that there's no reason these people aren't working. You know, and they say, well, we look. You know, it hurts some of them because they speak very little English. It hurts some of them that way. But I said, well, there's other jobs out there where you can get that, you know. So it's about a leg up, not a handout. We give them that handout, but then we expect them to come along and join the ministry with us and help. So.
Some volunteers for 7 minutes.
7 minutes. Okay, I'll put it up.
So you're out today. You don't have to then if you always do. You don't have to help today then if you always do. Because if you always help, then other people can't.
No, I enjoy it.
Okay. What are they doing for 7 minutes?
Setting up all the decorations.
Decorating for what?
Setting a timer up for the Sunday meal.
This Sunday's the meal?
Second Sunday.
Maybe Dwight and I need to swap pulpits this Sunday.
You need to say, hey, I'll be there on second Sunday. That means I've got to put this back together.